Hello, welcome to The Musics in Japan,
a conversational podcast about daily life for an American couple living long-term in Japan.
So lately I've been thinking about feeling secure versus feeling insecure.
Like turning on two-factor authentication for everything? Because I've had to do that for work. So that's on my mind.
Sort of, kind of. Because, like, in my life, there are a lot of sources that can lead to security or insecurity. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, with my job, with my PhD, with parenting, with wifing, with adulting, and, like, just every aspect of me, there's, like, the potential for security or insecurity. And I don't know why I forgot to mention money, but money's also an aspect of it.
Because we hate it, we does.
So, what do you think when I say that? And that was so therapy mode for me. Because I'll say something and then I ask my clients, so what do you think when I say that? Because I really want to know what their thoughts are to my opinions.
I feel like you give a lot of people a lot of security.
Thank you. That's really sweet.
Like emotional security.
Thank you. That's really sweet.
I think there's a big difference between being insecure and feeling insecure. And they don't always line up. Mm. So I think some people feel really secure, even though their life is really insecure and they logically should not feel secure.
Yeah.
And then some people don't feel secure no matter what, no matter how stable, good their life is, no matter how good everything in their life is, they don't feel secure.
So for me, I find that when I'm feeling insecure, it's about worthiness mm-hmm. rather than actual security. Because I have core trauma from just lifetime of abuse and PTSD. And so sometimes that, and I'm sure people can relate to this, that leads to me feeling just completely unworthy of anything good. And that's kind of like the legacy. It's not kind of like, it's completely the legacy of like, my mother was so abusive to me. And like, that's supposed to be the person who loves you unconditionally and loves you more than everybody else. Like, we have a running joke in our family, which probably isn't nice, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I can't stop myself. But I always tell Rasta how much I love him, but I always tell him, see, their mother doesn't love you as much as your mother loves you. And it's like a joke, but sometimes it's real talk. And that, because like sometimes he'll be like, friends back home in the U.S. they'll have issues or something. I'll be like, that's because their mother doesn't love them as much as your mother loves you. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. But it's something funny we say because I love him to the nth.
I think if you never have insecurity about whether you're worthy of the things you've got, then you've either had a really good therapist.
And even then.
Right.
Because I have a really good therapist, but even then.
Or you spend your time reading books like How to Manage Your Second Billion. You might only have $1,000 in the bank, but in your mind, you're on your way to your second billion.
So you think only delusional people never feel unworthy?
I don't think it's delusional so much as people who don't ever have to face the world. Like, there's a mathematical theorem called Arrow's Impossibility Theorem. Mm-hmm. Which says that if you have a system in which people vote on things and people are rational, then there's always going to be somebody who always gets what they want. Mm-hmm. The conditions for that, people generally agree, aren't fulfilled because people aren't rational in the way that's meant for rational choice theory, which is the branch of mathematics and economics that it's from. Mm-hmm. But there are people who basically always get what they want, whether or not they deserve it. Mm-hmm. And I think if you grow up always getting what you want, you don't really develop insecurity about whether or not you deserve it.
Rasta grew up pretty much getting everything he wanted.
Yeah.
And he still has insecurity sometimes.
So, but I should say, but we had Rasta, like, work for it. And I'm putting that in quotes because I think depending on how your family was when you grew up, like, my family was really, really poor when I grew up for a variety of reasons, despite my father having a good education. But I think there's like the insecurity of realizing but everything.
Even when we were dirt poor, like, so I don't want everybody thinking that Rasta grew up with the silver spoon smiles, because there were times that he got anything he wanted from the dollar store.
Right.
And up to three items, and then anything that he didn't get that time around, we could get next time around. And so, like, so maybe he didn't get every single thing he wanted. But he always tells me he always got everything he wanted. And so that was his lived experience of getting everything he wanted.
Yeah.
And sometimes he feels unworthy because he's aware that he's not doing what's necessary to be worthy of the level of lifestyle he's currently living.
Right.
So yeah, I think I'm just spilling all of Ross's business.
Well, I think everybody is worthy of, like, food, shelter, clothing, that kind of thing. Yes. You don't have to do anything to be worthy of that except exist.
Yes.
But I'm not a big fan of the concept of worthiness in general. I think things are inherently unfair. And saying somebody is worthy of having time off and somebody is not worthy of having time off is always a judgment. And it's always a judgment formed in ideology. I don't think there's a way that you can fairly decide who's worthy of what.
So for me, insecure and secure, my insecurity is based on feeling worthy. My pride system, the person that I say I'm proud of them the most to is Rasta, because I had a hand in what he's done. When I'm talking to my clients, I usually use the language of, I hope you are feeling proud of yourself, because they did the work, not me. Mm-hmm. Something I find interesting is that when I work with Japanese nationals, it was really challenging in the beginning, because the word proud is seen as a negative thing. To be prideful is to be seen as being narcissistic, that humility is valued more than pride.
Right.
And so teaching them that, hey, it's okay to step back and say, that was enough.
Right.
What I did right there was enough and all I could do. And when we do enough and all we can do, then, like, reshaping their understanding of the word pride.
Right.
And reshaping their understanding of affection, and reshaping their understanding of secure and insecure and worthwhile. Because for me, culturally, I will always think that you should tell your children, I love you. Mm-hmm. Culturally, in Japan, I love you is not really something that parents typically say to their children. At least, so this could be like confirmation bias, because the people that I see, their parents never said I love you to them ever once.
They're coming to see you because they need a therapist.
Yeah. So if you're Japanese and you say I love you to your kids, hit us up. Let us know we're wrong on this. But in my experience, even people who I don't see as therapists, even people I know as friends, don't say I love you to their kids. Mm-hmm. And, like, their kids don't say I love you back. Like, they think it's weird as heck that, like, before I hang up the phone, I say I love you.
Yeah.
Before we separate, I say I love you. And
but it happens so often that in my texting app that we use to communicate with Rasta when he's not around, all I have to do is hit L and it suggests love you too.
Yeah, and for us, anytime we pass each other, we touch, we kiss.
Yeah.
I can't count how many times we say, I love you in a day. Because I'll just, like, look over and be like, I love you. Mm-hmm. And then go back to what I'm doing and have it just be like, random love. And that's one of the things that helps me feel secure in our marriage. Mm-hmm. But I don't always feel worthy of our marriage. And so that's always kind of a quandary for me. Like, the moments that I feel insecure of our marriage are the moments that I don't feel worthy of our marriage. And I don't feel worthy of our marriage because sometimes I just feel like a whole bag of nuts.
I feel like
it's specifically hazelnuts.
Mm. It's tough because I feel like we're wired to use heuristics.
Yeah.
Like, and so we have these kind of things that we think. So whenever I see my bank account go down, I get the panic of I'm going to be homeless. Like, it doesn't matter where the bank account is at. It doesn't matter if it's gone down to $5 or $5 million.
Yeah.
It's my bank account went down. I'm going to be homeless next month.
Mm.
I haven't been homeless in 25 years, so.
So you have financial insecurity.
I have a lot of financial insecurity, always.
Even though we're both working and I feel like we're financially good.
Yeah, even though we're both working and even though I will spend money on things that I don't absolutely need.
You see, that's an area I feel like way secure in. I feel financially way secure. Mm-hmm. And I have like a whole system that I do to determine whether or not I can feel financially secure. And that's whether or not I'm meeting my financial goals by the specific date that I've set them. Mm. And so for me, it's like, okay, I want to have X amount saved in the bank by this date. And if I reach it by that date, then I feel financially secure. If I don't, then I go through all the money that I've spent and see, did I make an active choice to not make that?
Yeah.
That amount. And if I made an active choice not to make that amount, then I still feel financially good and financially secure. So it's rare that. Yeah, it's really rare that I feel financially insecure.
Yeah. For me, I think the thing I feel insecure about most often is whether or not I'm treating other people well. And I think that's probably because of the autism. Mm-hmm. Right? We got to capitalize both those again. I don't always know whether people appreciate what I'm doing, whether they see what I'm doing. And it's not about me receiving gratitude. It's about me not wanting to go around the world being an asshole and hurting people. And taking pride in what I do is a particularly tricky thing, because growing up, I was always told, the hubris, pride comes before the fall. And then on the religious side of things, is that if you're proud, then you're stiff-necked and God is going to chop off your head.
Okay, so that's like, wow.
Right?
Don't get your head chopped off.
Right? Like,
that's no bueno.
Like, if you're proud, somebody's going to come chop your head off with a sword. It's like the Highlander.
Okay.
There could be only one.
There could be no pride.
There could be only one person who's proud.
So I want to say something, that the language I use about myself, ideas, nuts, crazy, bananas. I'm talking about myself. I'm sorry if those words are triggering for you, but that's the way I talk about my mental health. I never talk about someone else's mental health in those terms, but we talk a lot on this show about owning our own definitions and about me not being a monolith. I'm not a monolith for mental health or, you know, people who are having mental health issues. And as a therapist, I wouldn't say that, but right now I'm just talking about myself. And sometimes the language that I grew up learning, sometimes I feel crazy. And when I say crazy, I mean delusional. Mm. So for me, it's completely delusional that I feel like I'm in a complete state of delusion when I feel unworthy of my marriage, because early on in our relationship, something I absolutely love about our relationship is that we were best friends first.
Yes.
And so we really, like, and we would stay up till all hours of the night just hanging out and talking.
Yeah, it wasn't the, well, you're my partner, so I'm going to say you're my best friend.
No, but, like, we weren't having sex.
Right, we weren't dating.
I was trying to hook you up with other people.
Yes.
Like, on the regular.
Actively, yes.
Yeah, because I thought you were a good guy.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we would, and we told each other all of our secrets as best friends do. And we really talked about like what was working and what was not working in our current relationships, because we were each in other relationships. You were married to someone else and I was dating the town.
Yeah.
And I had an ex that I was kind of going back and forth with. And I was like, these things are driving me nuts. This is what makes me not want to be with this person. So we got like the unvarnished truth from each other about what we want and don't want.
Yeah, because there was no stakes. I wasn't trying to impress you. You weren't trying to impress me.
Yeah, and I never thought that you would have to live up to the standards. So there was like no protecting your feelings.
Yeah.
And no, like, you're not working in this way. So I have a really good understanding of what your deal breakers are.
Yeah.
And what makes you feel valued and what doesn't make you feel valued. And I strive every day to make you feel valued. And when I feel guilt, which anyone who knows me knows, I think guilt is the most toxic emotion a human being can feel. And when we research it, the research backs it up, because it doesn't serve any purpose. And I talk when anyone who talks to me knows, I believe in a strong difference between criticism and constructive criticism. Criticism is, you're fat. Constructive criticism is, hey, I'm concerned about your health. Would you like to do these healthy activities with me? Neither one of those are going to land well, but at least with the constructive criticism, there's like, okay, these are the steps you can take. Mm-hmm. So when I hear my internal bully just telling me, you're a shit wife, well, that's not constructive in any way.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't be the one who gets to decide that.
And I think
that, 'cause I'm not married to me.
The example you use for constructive criticism is interesting because in the one, it's just saying what you think the problem is. And the second one, like being fat. And the second one is saying what you think the effect of it is.
Yes. Is
poor health.
Yes.
Because although I'm fat, I have excellent blood pressure, cholesterol, blood sugars, like all of that.
So, you have a crazy good resting heart rate.
Yeah. So for me, if you say, I'm concerned about your health because you're fat, I can just say, don't be. I'm actually much healthier now that I'm fat than I was when I was skinny.
Yeah.
So I think that there's kind of a sense of judgment that comes with criticism of, I know what's going on. I know how to fix it. That constructive criticism can start a conversation. That being said, like always associating being fat with ill health is kind of exhausting. Like there are certain things.
It's a personal pet peeve of yours.
Yeah.
But I feel like people are going to be sick of hearing us talk about being fat. Mm-hmm. See, and I feel like that's an example of me being a bad wife. I know you like to go on tangents, but I'm like, this tangent is boring me. So let's talk about something different. I feel like that kind of thing is harsh.
It's
I feel
not.
Like I'm really a harsh person to live with. I feel very, very mean.
You're not mean. You're very blunt and direct. And
yeah, I am very blunt.
As an autistic person, I appreciate that.
So I tell, it's so funny. The whole time I've been a therapist, I tell my clients this phrase and everybody has the same reaction to it. They brace themselves for something really horrible. I say, can I tell you something gently but directly? And it's never gentle, but it's always direct.
Yeah.
And they're like, that was not gentle at all. I said, but I said the word gentle.
I asked if I could, and obviously the answer is no.
I've had people be like, no, I can't handle any truths today. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, crack on, know who you are. That's awesome. Catch your moment on that. And then I don't. But I think my thoughts. And so, like, something else I struggle with is I love to travel. Mm-hmm. Freaking love it. It's one of, like, my favorite thing to do in the whole wide world. And if you're a music note, you already know this about me because we did, like, a whole episode on it. Go check out our Patreon for $2. You can listen to all the back episodes. But when we travel, sometimes I feel completely unworthy of your willingness to travel. Because here's the thing. I think you're the only person in the world besides Rasta who would ever enjoy traveling with me. I am so incredibly bossy. Like, for example, we recently went to Hakone. Both times we've gone to Hakone, it's gone down this way. When are you buying the tickets? Did you make the reservations? Did you make the dinner? And it's like a bunch of, it's a to-do list for you. And then when we get there, this is how we set up the room. Unpack this, move that, do this, do that. And then let's sit down and plan out what we're going to do every day. And then that's the schedule and we stick to it.
And that gives me so much security. Because I don't have the insecurity of, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the things that are going to make Christopher feel good and enjoy the trip, enjoy the vacation? So that's why I say most of my insecurity, other than financial, revolves around whether or not I'm treating the people around me well. Because growing up, like, not to blame my parents for everything, but to blame my parents for everything.
Because they were horrible.
Yeah.
Growing, horrible, terrible parents.
Growing up, I was always made to feel like I was in the wrong. Like, everybody else's emotions were my fault, if they were negative.
Yes, I'm doing it again, everyone. I'm moving the mic all around. I'm shifty. I can't help it. I don't know how it sounds on the podcast, but I cannot keep the mic still.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were saying how horrible your parents are.
Yeah. And that
were.
That makes me feel insecure.
One's dead. The other one's not dead yet. Okay.
That makes me feel insecure because I always want to make sure the people around me, that I'm not making them uncomfortable. Like, I accept that people around me will be uncomfortable for their own reasons. I just don't want to be that reason.
Unless you're on a train and somebody's sitting in a disabled seat.
I would like them to feel uncomfortable because they deserve to feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
So if
I... on our last trip to Hakone, you totally made someone feel extremely uncomfortable. And I found it confusing. Like, there were two people sitting next to you, but you only wanted to make one of the people sitting next to you uncomfortable. And it was just interesting for me to watch because I don't feel anything for the person. And the one person you wanted to make uncomfortable was so uncomfortable. And then you moved and you were like, everyone's acting right in this row, so I won't make anyone uncomfortable. Because when we get on the train and we travel, I take the suitcase.
Right.
Because I don't have mobility issues. I do, but they're not as severe as yours. Yeah. So I take the suitcase and I put it, there's like a space to me that's the size, not to me, there's a space on the train that's the side of our suitcase at the end of a row.
Right.
And I stand there and then you sit as close to me as you can. And throughout the train ride, you move closer to me.
Yes.
So you moved three times.
It was like Frogger.
Yeah, I completely like Frogger. And I was like, yay, I knew you got here. And I gave you a kiss. I knew you could do it. And it was like one stop before we got off. So it's like a 14-minute train ride, the first train ride. And then the next train ride, if we're going to Hakone specifically, is 2 hours.
Yeah. So and, I have a strong sense of social justice, which doesn't necessarily agree with everyone else's.
Okay.
And the mass to back it up. So I'm like a social justice barbarian. Like,
yes, you are.
Because I just use myself, not a sword or anything. Like a social justice warrior might. They might have like a sword and shield. I've just got myself and my wildness.
Yes.
So the guy that I wanted to make uncomfortable, we're sitting on the train, right? He's sitting in one of the seats that's supposed to be reserved for people who really need a seat.
Yeah.
And maybe he really did. But he did not need to take off his shoes, spread himself out to take off two seats, to take up two seats, go to sleep reeking of alcohol, and like growl at anybody who came near him.
Okay, true that.
So,
mind you, at 11 a.m. in the morning.
At 10:30 in the morning.
At 10:30 in the morning, yeah.
Yeah. So, what I did to make him uncomfortable was sit in the seat that he had decided was his extra seat.
No, you have a thing you do.
Yes, I take up my allotted space aggressively.
Yes. Which is an art form.
Yes.
It's an art form. Because I've only ever seen you be able to do that. Like, I guess I can do it sometimes, but not really. I think that you're really good at doing that. So when you're making that person feel uncomfortable, are you feeling insecure?
I am not feeling insecure. I'm feeling like...
Are you feeling like a bully?
I don't feel like a bully. I feel like a lot of people use kindness as a weapon. Other mm-hmm. people's kindness, not their own. Using your own kindness as a weapon is a particular Mormon art form that I've yeah. seen mastered, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about people who rely on other people's kindness and discomfort to make themselves uncomfortable, make themselves comfortable at the expense of everyone else on purpose. Mm. Like their goal is to be comfortable even if it discomforts other people.
Mm.
I don't feel like a bully when I make them rein that in.
Okay, that makes complete sense to me.
Because there are social rules. I'm just making them follow the rules.
There are social rules.
Yeah.
Sorry if I'm distracting you, but there's like a bug on the wall behind you.
Oh.
And it keeps flying around and then landing. Flying around and then landing.
I hope I don't make it uncomfortable.
So it's bugging me. It's because it flies in one circular loop and then lands.
Mm.
So... Yeah, we'll have to catch it with a cup.
Yeah.
So, I don't, like, we can't deal with it right now. We're not going to interrupt, so I'm going to stop looking over there. Okay. But then I can't look at you. And that's, like, that makes me uncomfortable. So, for me, I have sometimes bouts of depression triggered by exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
And in December... I was feeling depressed because I was exhausted because my self-care had gone completely out the window and I was working 7 days a week. I had not taken a day off in 3 months.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I've got to shake things up. And so, like, if you follow us on Twitter, you know that for the first time ever, like, in December when we went to Hakone, I set an automatic responder on my email. So even if I check my email, it's already been responded to, so I don't have to respond. And it would look really weird if I did and make the person receiving the response extremely uncomfortable. So the purpose of setting the responder was to stop my behavior.
Right.
Because I never want someone to feel hurt because I emailed them.
Yeah. So I want to clarify that you're lying right here. You had set an autoresponder before. Because when I went to set it, because you don't actually set it, you asked me to.
Okay.
It said that back in 2014, you had set one for 2 days.
And I think that's because I was at a residency.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. So it's my second time setting an autoresponder. So, yeah, you can see it's not something that I do regularly. And I was really, really honored and pleased and happy that none of my clients emailed me. Mm-hmm. So I felt really seen, but I was feeling completely invisible because my job is to not be visible in the room.
Yeah, the nature of your job is not to make it about you.
Yeah. And I think I do a pretty good job of that, but I don't think I'm invisible. Mm-hmm. In the room. I think I'm still visible. And I don't do tabula rasa. I do, like, this is me. This is who I am. And these are the biases I bring into the situation.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm using the wrong language, but I think you do trauma-informed therapy.
Yes.
And part of that is making people feel safe by showing them how you can relate, how their experience is not unique. It's not unknown, but it is theirs.
Yes.
So all of that requires that you bring a lot of yourself to the table. And I see on Twitter, especially, and other places, people saying we really need more therapists who didn't go, you know, grade high school grades, go to college at 18, zip through that, get their licensure right after that, have no life experience before they start being a therapist telling people who have experienced deep trauma how to fix things.
Yeah. I agree with that. But I'm biased. I'm not biased. I also share, like, my security and insecurity. For the most part, I spend most of my life feeling really confident and really competent and really secure. But when the PTSD kicks up, sometimes it's really hard to feel worthy, and then that leads to me feeling insecure, and that almost always centers around you. Mm-hmm. Because you really are an amazing, beautiful, wonderful human being and an amazing, beautiful, wonderful husband who loves me very well and loves me, like, clearly loves me very much.
The pressure.
I know, because now this is a public statement. You have to live up to that, man. That's what you need to be. You always have to be, like, the best husband ever. And I feel bad because any moment that you're not being the best husband ever, I own this. I need to stop doing this. I will drag you on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will. And sometimes it's not even having to do about you. Well, sometimes I can be upset at our son, and I will just lump you in. Because if our son hurts our feelings, I get so upset with you.
And I always know who I'm competing against.
And I said hurts our feelings, like the royal we.
I always know who I'm competing against.
Okay, who are you competing against?
I'm competing against the husband without autism.
What are you talking about?
Like, you know, because some people, you'll say my autistic husband, and they'll say, you mean your husband with autism? And I'm like, damn it, there's that husband without autism competing
against. Yeah, no, again. I don't ever say that shit.
No, you don't.
I only have one husband. I do like to tell you you're my favorite husband.
Yes.
Because you're like, out of how many? I just love that response. It tickles me pink, so I can only say just one.
Yes, I will reliably respond that way.
Yes. How many do you have? I have just the one. But you are the best of one.
Thank you.
You're the imminent.
Thank you, because sometimes you could get a vote of no confidence, which is like, you are not even the best of one.
So I find something else that triggers me. That triggers insecurity is the United States, news in the United States,
mm.
when there's really embarrassing stuff going down or really racist stuff or really ableist stuff. So all the time.
Yeah.
News about the U.S. is very upsetting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it really hard to cope with. And my, because I so strongly identify as an American, and I feel like Make America Great Again, that slogan is very triggering for me.
Yeah.
Because the 1950s was not a great time for people of color.
Right.
And even in 2019, it's not a great time for people of color. It's gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still not safe. That really just triggers me. And then also when we go to in Japan, for the most part, I'm locked away from racism. I don't experience it, except for when we go to hotels. And if we stay in a hotel, they'll ask us for our passport, which is actually against the law because we're residents of Japan.
So it's not against the law for them to ask,
okay.
But they're not legally entitled to have it.
Okay. So but, tell me about that, because I thought it was against the law.
No.
I thought it was discrimination.
So hotels are legally required to get a copy of the passport of anybody who doesn't have a residence in Japan.
Okay.
But they are not legally entitled to even see the passport of people who are residents of Japan. Whether okay. that's you're a resident who's not Japanese or you're Japanese.
Okay.
But the only indication that the hotels have that we are not Japanese when we make the reservation is how we look and our name.
Yeah, because we don't look... Well, I look like I have a Japanese grandparent.
Well, and there's
I have big, round... Light colored eyes.
And there's no thing on the reservation box like, are you a citizen or are you a resident? Okay. There's no place that you put it in.
And there's lots of Blackanese.
Yeah. And in fact, in many hotels.
I should explain. So in my culture, and this is Christopher's culture, a lot of my sisters and brothers of color, we like to add black to any like Blorian, Black Koreans, Blorian, Black Koreans. Blackanese, Black Japanese, Black Chinese, Blasian, Black Asian. We like to add that black in there.
Yes.
I love it.
Interesting.
And you stayed fully in your lane. You go with that. That was awesome, babe. So anybody that it offends, if you're Blackanese, if you're Black and Japanese and you don't like being called Blackanese, I won't call you Blackanese. But know that there are people in the world that identify as Blackanese.
Well, it's a lot easier to understand what that means than Jack. Because that would be the other way to put them together?
No, it would not. Oh my God. So we looked up the nickname Jack. Because I was like, what's up with Jack? Because Jack is like, for some reason, like there's a bunch of TV shows on the thing that I watch that had the name Jack in it. And I'm like, Jack. What is Jack a nickname for? And Chad was like, Jackson. I was like, okay, that makes sense.
I did not say that. You said that. I said it's a nickname for James.
You said Jackson and James.
You said
Jackson and James. Oh, my God.
I absolutely did not say Jackson. Jackson is the son of Jack. Jackson is a last name in the same way that Chadwick is not a first name for most people. It's a last name.
Okay, whatever. Just tell the story.
So I
see,
said,
again, me being rude, cutting you off.
I said, James.
Bossy, with a boss face.
And then you were like, but what about Jackson? I said, okay, I guess it could be, which is not suggesting it. It's agreeing with you're crazy.
But then go on like the long list.
So I looked it up, as we do. And it's like, yeah, Jack is an abbreviation of John or James or Joaquin or... I think that was the one that I was like...
Yeah, Joaquin was the strangest to me.
Yeah. And it just said, basically, Jack was the abbreviation of basically any man's name in the in England.
And now, you can be Jack. You can be a Japanese person who is also black. But I like Blackanese better.
That's what I say. I think it's clearer.
Yeah, it is clearer. And so Ross's babies will be Blackanese. And they will know they're Blackanese with their crowns. They're beautiful crowns.
But I think Japan is not as ethnically homogenous.
And I was saying to them, beautiful people have afros.
Japan is not as ethnically homogenous as some people think that it is.
Yeah.
Because there are distinct ethnic groups within Japan who are all considered Japanese. So, yes, if you define everybody whose, let's say, great-great-grandparents were born in Japan to be Japanese, then sure, it's ethnically homogenous. But there are Japanese people who are lighter skinned and darker skinned and have different physiologies. And when we went to Hokkaido a couple of years ago, there's the Ainu people who are indigenous to that region, not descended from immigrants from the Korean Peninsula. So, but I'm white. And so they think you couldn't possibly be Japanese. And they demand my passport. I'm like, I live here. I'm not giving you my passport. And then they want my residence card. I'm like, okay, you can have my residence card. But I just get annoyed when I like start at the default of you're foreign.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I'm having this conversation with them in Japanese.
I know that part always annoys you.
Yeah, like I'm explaining the law to you in Japanese that I'm not a tourist, so I'm not required to present my passport.
You don't think there are any tourists with, like, dope Japanese?
I think there are probably some tourists with excellent Japanese. I just think that when you're speaking a language that is only native to one country in the world, you should not assume that the person fluently speaking it to you is a foreigner just because of how they look.
That's true, because there are a lot of people who don't look Japanese that are Japanese, which is the point you're making earlier.
Yes.
So, does that make you feel insecure?
It doesn't make me feel insecure because I know that they're wrong. And so I don't often feel insecure when somebody else is being wrong, as long as they don't have power over me. Because I know that how it's going to end up is I'm going to show them my ID. If they've upset me, I'm going to tell them they can't take a copy of it. They always want to take a copy of it because us sneaky foreigners are going to run off without the bill or whatever. Who knows why they want a copy of it, but all hotels want a copy.
They don't take copies of Japanese nationals. I think that's important to include.
Yeah. Some hotels are like, we take copies of everybody's ID. If I'm standing in line and they're taking copies of everybody's ID, I'm like, rock on. Have a copy of my ID. But if it's, you know, 10 Japanese people in front of me, don't even show ID. And then they're like, where's your passport? Let us have a blood sample. Kind of thing. I'm like, no, I'm going to argue with you about this in Japanese. And I don't feel insecure about that.
See, for me, I find it really triggering because what racism tells you, if you let it internalize, is that you're unworthy by virtue of something that was made up. Race is a made up thing. We're all part of the human race.
Yeah.
We are all human beings. And like, y'all can debate me on that because of DNA testing and all of that. And we can get into it. We can mix it up. But race is a made up thing. So for me, them being that bit of racism, I find it triggers insecurity. Like, oh snap, here it comes. It's about to jump off. And I feel like I have to get ready. Like, I have to get ready for a fight. I have to get ready to prove my worth. I have to get ready to prove that I deserve to be here. And that's really triggering. And then it can start me wondering, like, is there any place on earth that I could go and just be safe and just be?
So is it worse because it's structural? Because they're always like, well, this is the hotel rules. This isn't me personally being a racist. This is just, you live in a racist system.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because I'm able to ignore that the Japanese system is inherently racist.
Right.
I'm able to ignore it for the most part because I live outside of Japanese society and rules. So a lot of the misogyny, I'm not a victim to it. And also I'm my own boss. Mm-hmm. So I really am the head boss in charge. So yeah, I don't discriminate against myself at work.
No.
I pamper myself. I make my schedule. Like, yeah. But sometimes I do make myself get coffee. Mm-hmm. I do get all of my clients a beverage. But I don't think of myself as the tea lady, even when I'm getting tea.
Interesting.
Yeah, I am lady. I'm obsessed with my hair again.
I've never been the tea guy or the coffee guy at at work in Japan. When I was younger, I did that, like at restaurants and things when I was working there. But the last company I worked for, not my current employer, when I go up to the Tokyo office, they were like, would you like some coffee? What would you like? Because they had a schedule for everybody who worked in the office all the time to do the coffee.
Yeah.
But I was there like 10 days a year. They're not going to put me on the schedule. But they all sit around going, why isn't Chad bringing us our coffee?
It was rare, random, and always negotiated.
That's what I'm saying. It was about 10 days a year. Oftentimes,
the office didn't even know you were coming.
Yes.
Like, only two people in the office knew you were coming. So, I feel, for the most part, I feel secure. The thing I feel most insecure about is whether or not I'm a good wife to you.
Well, you are.
Thank you. Because I'd be a horrible wife to me. I would not enjoy being married to me. Mm-hmm. In the least. I would not enjoy being married to me.
Good thing you're not, then.
So I hope y'all are happy in whatever relationships you're in. And if you're single, I hope that you're happy in the relationship with yourself. And even if you're coupled, I hope you're happy with the relationship in yourself. Because while I wouldn't want to be married to me, I do like myself more than dislike myself. And the things that I don't like about myself, I try and change. So I think for the most part, I feel secure.
I think for the most part, I do. I have a few things that consistently make me feel insecure, and I work to battle those and feel better about them.
And you're dead sexy, by the way. I haven't perved on you at all this podcast. They're going to be like, are we even listening to the musics in Japan if Christopher hasn't perved on Chad?
Are you threatening me?
I'm threatening you with a good time, baby.
Okay. Please do threaten me with a good time.
Bye. Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. You can keep the conversation going on our website at themusicsinjapan.com. That's the music spelled M-U-S-I-C-K-S. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at The Musics on both.
And if you'd like to support us, please visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, join a Patreon tier, or send us a one-time donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. We hope you'll listen again next week.
Bye.